BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today. We're going to have a roundup, a news roundup today here on Crosstalk. It is Friday, and as often as we can, try to wrap up a number of news stories here through the at the end of the week and seek to keep you informed on a number of issues that, well, just kind of escape the mainstream media. Covering a number of topics and issues, and just looking through some of these things here today, I'm so reminded the verse from the Gospel of John that men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. And indeed, we see much evil taking place. But also keep in mind this, ladies and gentlemen, that the darker the night, the brighter the light shines, and how important it is for the gospel to be going forward in such a time as this. A number of issues that are in the news here this week. Number one, we would start with the National Review. Early Monday, regulators seized the San Francisco-based First Republic Bank, agreed to sell its deposits and most of its assets to J.P. Morgan Chase, preventing further spiral in the banking industry. Three of the four largest ever U.S. bank failures have occurred in the past 2 months. First Republic, which is, as of April 13th, had $229.1 billion in total assets, $103.9 billion in total deposits, the second largest bank to go under in U.S. history. That's behind only Washington Mutual, which went down back in 2008. First Republic has been struggling since the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and New York-based Signature Bank in the month of March. Reuters is reporting that shares of the U.S. regional banks PacWest Bancorp and Western Alliance Bank plunged on Tuesday as the demise of First Republic Bank triggered investor concerns about the financial health of other midsize lenders. The collapse of finances, folks, taking place. We're seeing the beginnings of this. Interest rates went up a quarter point Wednesday. The Federal Reserve signaling going forward that they may pause the rate hikes after their streak of 10 in a row, reports CBN News. The Fed's hope that the string of rate hikes will help bring down inflation, but now they'll step back and assess if it's time to pause the rate hikes amid growing concerns. Powell said that they'll be monitoring factors like the recent bank failures to see if it's time to cool the rate hikes, but he expressed confidence in the system. The Center Square reporting that the U.S. Secretary Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, gave lawmakers a deadline Monday, raise the debt ceiling by June 1st or risk a default on U.S. debt obligations. Sent a letter to congressional leaders Monday saying a default could come as early as June the 1st. And we see that federal receipts are, and outlays are inherently variable. They don't know the exact date, but after her warning, President Biden reportedly reached out to congressional lawmakers Monday to schedule a meeting. Daily Signal is reporting the U.S. Will run out of cash to pay all government bills on time on June 8th. That's according to Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. The economist hedged, however, noting that the data is uncertain because it depends on uncertain tax receipts. Don't quite know the date, but he said there's a possibility, worst case scenario, that it would be June 1st. It could be very close. Fox News is reporting the U.S. has evacuated its first group of American citizens and permanent residents from Sudan since war broke out in the capital just weeks ago. The land evacuation started last Friday with efforts to bus a large group of Americans to the Red Sea via Port Sudan. And we understand that also the Daily Wire telling us that the U.S. reportedly deployed a Navy ship to Sudan to evacuate hundreds of American citizens stranded after warring military groups began struggling for power earlier this month. According to Reuters, two anonymous U.S. officials said on Sunday that the Navy temporarily stationed the USNS Brunswick in Port Sudan, likely meant to evacuate U.S. citizens on the vessel. One American News Network is reporting that Russian officials claim that Ukrainian forces had conducted a drone attack against the Kremlin, targeting Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday. According to the state media agency TASS, the Kremlin said the overnight drone attack had targeted the Russian president's residence within the Kremlin. However, the attack was successfully repulsed and Putin was not in the building at the time of the attack, and there were no injuries reported as a result. Well, that came out, and then National Review reports that Moscow originally blamed Ukraine for what is being called an act of terrorism and an attempt to assassinate Putin. But on Thursday, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov argued that the U.S. was undoubtedly behind the attack, saying, "We know very well that decisions on such actions and such terrorist attacks are not made in Kyiv, but in Washington." Both Ukraine and the U.S. have denied involvement in the alleged drone attack, saying Mr. Peskov is lying. It's obviously a ludicrous claim. Well, the Business Insider even takes this a step further here, and a U.S. think tank says Russia likely staged this drone attack on the Kremlin as a false flag operation, with other observers noting how politically advantageous the incident would be for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Well, we'll see when the truth comes out in all of this. One American News Network reporting American officials said Tuesday that the U.S. will be sending about $300 million in additional military aid to Ukraine, including large quantities of artillery shells, howitzers, air-to-surface missiles, and ammunition as the spring offensive against Russia forces nears its start. Also, just the news reporting that the Department of Homeland Security, Department of State, announced unprecedented policies to expand entry to the U.S., while also claiming the border is closed ahead of the Public Health Authority Title 42, which ends on May the 11th. The new policies, they said, will further reduce unlawful migration across the Western Hemisphere, significantly expanding lawful pathways for protection and facilitate the safe, orderly, and humane processing of migrants. Folks, understand that what the Biden administration is doing, they're trying to expand entry to the United States ahead of this Title 42 surge expected on May the 11th. But they're saying it's lawful because, yes, they're calling it lawful, though it's still illegal immigration coming into our country. But they're calling it now lawful means if you follow our system of coming into the country. Breitbart is reporting as many as 700,000 migrants, a foreign population larger than Boston, are currently in Mexico waiting to rush the U.S.-Mexico border when President Joe Biden ends the public health emergency known as Title 42 on May the 11th. During a Yuma County Board of Supervisors meeting this week, Supervisor Jonathan Lyons revealed that the Department of Homeland Security officials have warned them of the surge. And right now, all of the people that are coming across the border, 40% of them are expelled under Title 42 in Yuma, Arizona. So 40% of the people coming across are immediately expelled and they're flown back to their countries of origin. That goes away on May the 11th, where they are no longer processed out. Friends, Lord willing, on Monday, we are going to be having a program with Mark Krikorian from the Center for Immigration Studies to focus solely on immigration. Even as a Daily Caller is pointing out now, the Pentagon sending a contingent of troops to the southern border to reinforce customs and border protection missions ahead of the expected surge in migrant entrances later this month. So Department of Homeland Security requesting the Pentagon's assistance. Oh, this is also interesting on the topic from FoxNews.com. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was eviscerated by Twitter users after declaring that illegal immigration was down by 90% since implementing President Biden's immigration policies. What a crazy claim. Townhall.com, we have Matt Vespa saying it's a pure blue state madness. Seattle might as well roll out a welcome mat to every rapist, murderer, carjacker, thief, and child trafficker in the area because police can no longer pursue suspects in vehicles. That's right. If a cop sees a man get shot in front of him, it might be best for him or her just to stay put so as to not to rock the boat or violate department policy. Officers who wish to execute their duties need to undergo special training to engage in pursuing suspects. In the meantime, law enforcement's working quickly to find a way to comply with the new law and maintain law and order. The bill explicitly states that no officer should pursue suspects in all cases unless they've obtained this new certificate permitting them to arrest murderers, rapists, and other criminals who prey upon innocent civilians. Friends, it is outrageous what is going on in Washington right now, and this in Seattle, as it relates to a no-pursuit policy unless you got the certificate. Crazy, folks. Washington Free Beacon also is reporting that Washington State's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee this week called a special session of the state legislature a last-ditch effort to pass a bill to prevent fentanyl from being automatically decriminalized as deaths continue to soar across the country from the drug. Inslee's move to reconvene the Democrat-controlled legislature comes after it adjourned last week without passing a bill addressing penalties for drug possession ahead of the July 1st expiration of the state's current drug possession law. If lawmakers don't pass a new bill by that date, hard drugs, including fentanyl, will automatically be decriminalized in the state. And speaking of fentanyl deaths, Washington Free Beacon reporting that the rate of drug overdose deaths involving the synthetic opioid more than tripled in the U.S. from 2016 through 2021. That's according to a report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, just released it on Wednesday. Fentanyl is up to 50 times stronger than heroin, 100 times stronger than morphine, and has increasingly been mixed with other illicit drugs, often with lethal results. CDC reported that the rate of drug overdose deaths involving fentanyl increased from 5.7 per 100,000 people in 2016 to 21.6 per 100,000 in 2021. Fentanyl-related deaths rose by about 55% in 2019 to 2020 and another 24.1% in 2020 to 2021. That's a statement from Marianne Rose Spencer, one of the authors of the report. Washington Examiner telling us Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin claimed that State Secretary Antony Blinken lied to Congress about his contact with Hunter Biden and so much more. In an appearance on Fox News Sunday Morning Futures, Johnson relayed his belief that the Secretary of State had bold-faced lied in a voluntary 2020 interview in which he said in order to secure his current position in the government. When pressed on the accusation that Blinken lied under oath, Johnson added to this accusation, saying that not only Blinken, but also his wife had contact with Hunter Biden while she was an employee at the State Department. He said he did not email Hunter Biden, and now we have those emails. We also know that his wife, using her private email address when she was an employee of the State Department, was basically a conduit between her husband and Hunter Biden as well, he continued. So again, I think there's so much more to uncover here. There's so much more to investigate. New York Post telling us the Arkansas judge overseeing Hunter Biden's long-running child support battle chastised the first son's lawyers Monday for being stingy with financial data. Judge Holly Meyer rebuked the legal team during the two-hour proceedings, saying they wrongly concealed details of filings that had already been submitted to the court as part of the ongoing legal saga. The ability to redact is somewhat being abused, the judge said. Hunter appeared in Batesville court as he seeks to reduce his monthly payments for the four-year-old daughter that he fathered with an ex-stripper, London Roberts. He was required to hand over documents detailing his money situation after he reopened his paternity case last September to try and reduce his $20,000 per month remittance. Well, the first son, who has never met his daughter with Roberts, has alleged he experienced a substantial material change in his income. Well, the judge on Monday ordered Hunter to answer additional written questions about his money, including investments, his art sales, and, yes, other financial transactions. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, popular creation speaker with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, does the camel store its water in its hump?
No, Chris, the camel does not store water in its hump, but it uses that hump to store fat from which it draws energy when it goes for long stretches without food or water. Actually, there are many specific design characteristics about a camel. It has extra long eyelashes to protect its eyes from wind in the desert. It has the ability to close up its nostrils to protect its lungs, and wide pads on its feet, which make walking on sand easier. Its thick coat of hair protects it from extreme temperatures. It has lots of physiological abilities which are moderated when it has to go without water. The camel has played a very important role in human history. In many ways, it's an obnoxious creature, but it's a marvel of God's design. He created all land animals on day 6 of creation week, back in Genesis.
This is Chris O'Brien,
Thanks for going back to Genesis.
We've got a Friday News Roundup here today on Crosstalk, coming your way from the VCY American Network and covering a number of topics and issues. Lord willing, later in the program, we'll give you opportunity to call in with your comments on these or other current event issues. Just the News is reporting that House and Senate GOP investigators said Wednesday that they have learned that the FBI possesses a document alleging a pay-to-play bribery scheme involving President Joe Biden, and have subpoenaed it in an explosive new twist in their long-running corruption probe of the First Family. Senate Budget Committee ranking member and longtime whistleblower Advocate Chuck Grassley and House Committee Oversight and Accountability Chair James Comer said they learned of the document known as FD-1023 from a whistleblower, saying, "We believe the FBI possesses an unclassified internal document that includes very serious and detailed allegations implicating the current president of the United States. The information provided by a whistleblower raises concerns that then-Vice President Biden allegedly engaged in a bribery scheme with a foreign national." Let's hit another issue today. LifeNews.com. Three women died after, well, along with their unborn babies, in abortions last year in Indiana, including two by the supposedly safe abortion pill. According to state records obtained by Voices for Life, Indiana pro-life organizations said it found records of more than 100 health and safety violations in 2022 by state abortion facilities, including the three women's deaths and at least four cases where abortion facilities appeared to cover up the sexual abuse of girls as young as 13. It's more about the money, folks. Additionally, records indicate two babies were born alive in botched abortions, according to The Federalist, which first reported the story. Pro-life leaders expressed frustration that state authorities do not appear to be doing anything to investigate or punish these violations and to protect women and babies. Axios is reporting the North Carolina State Senate Thursday passed a 12-week abortion ban, almost certain to become law in the state. Governor Cooper plans to veto the bill, but Republicans who hold a veto-proof supermajority in this legislature have said that they plan to override him. From townhall.com, this week, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, a Republican, signed a slew of bills into law creating protections for babies, mothers, and abortion survivors. The signed a total of five bills, including ensuring that taxpayer funds are not used toward abortion, protect the lives of babies who are born alive following a botched abortion, and the legislation prohibits the abortion of viable babies unless necessary to protect the life of the mother. The governor is saying, "Like you, I firmly believe all life is precious and must be protected." Also, there is which gives physicians the right of conscience in this as well. And also a budget the proposal that includes a $1,200 refundable child tax credit for children under six and an adoption tax credit up to $7,500. The Daily Signal telling us that the American College of Pediatricians scored a major victory last month when a federal judge ruled in its favor and halted the FDA's approval of Mifepristone. It's a drug used in chemical abortions. Well, just days and weeks later, the organization endured a cyber attack carried out by hackers intending to cause major damage. As if that wasn't enough, news of the hack was then leaked to a hostile journalist in a fleeting attempt to damage the organization's reputation. From LifeNews.com, New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed another radical pro-abortion bill into law Tuesday, this time to force public colleges to provide dangerous abortion pills to students on campus. Now the 64 State University of New York and 25 City University of New York campuses will become abortion centers too, according to the tablet. LifeNews.com, doctors celebrate the success of a pioneer surgery this week that saved an unborn baby girl's life and potentially could save thousands more. Yahoo News reported that baby Denver underwent the first successful fetal brain surgery in March at Boston Children's Hospital and is now thriving at home with her Louisiana family. Dr. Darren Orbach, who oversaw the surgery, said, "We're pleased to report that now at 6 weeks, the infant is progressing remarkably well on no medications, eating normally, gaining weight, and is back home. No signs of any negative effects on the brain." At 30 weeks of pregnancy, Denver was diagnosed with a rare and sometimes fatal brain abnormality called vein of Galen malformation. Well, this is the first successful fetal brain surgery, and it was conducted at Boston Children's Hospital. The Washington Times telling us Justice Samuel Alito says he knows likely who leaked the draft opinion overturning abortion rights and ridiculed the suggestion that it might have been a conservative clerk. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal published last Friday, he said the leak created an atmosphere of suspicion and distrust. We worked through it, and last year we got our work done. This year, I think we're going to get back to normal operations as much as we can, but he said it was damaging. The leak caused protest outside the court and at the conservative justices' homes. It also led to an assassination attempt of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. When the final opinion was issued in June, the leak proved parallel to the final ruling that Justice Alito authored. Despite Justice Roberts ordering a probe into the leak, no perpetrator has been identified. And he said, I personally have a pretty good idea who's responsible, but that's different from having the level of proof that's needed to name somebody. But it was a part of an effort to prevent the Dobbs draft from becoming the decision of the court. And that's how it was used for those 6 weeks by people on the outside as part of the campaign to try and intimidate the court. He said that made us targets of assassination. The high court announced in January it was unable to prove who leaked the documents. Folks, that was 1 year ago this week that the leak came out. The Daily Wire reports that all 9 Supreme Court justices issued a statement late last week pushing back on attempts from Senate Democrats to implement new ethics oversight measures over the nation's highest court, which comes after the political left tried to generate controversy surrounding 3 conservative justices in recent weeks. The statement from the justices also included a letter from the Chief Justice to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Richard Durbin, saying that he will not attend a hearing that Senate Democrats want to hold. He said testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee by the Chief Justice of the court is exceedingly rare, as one might expect in light of separation of powers concerns and the importance of preserving judicial independence. Hot Air is reporting, according to both Senators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, 15 Democrats from the Judiciary Committee have sent a letter to the Appropriations Committee asking that funding for their security, for the security of justices, the security that defends the lives of these justices and their families, that they should deny these money until the court buckles to the demands of the Democrats. They're making demands that the court accept this code of ethics being pushed by the left, and apparently they've threatened to withhold funding for the security details that protect the justices unless Justice Roberts caves to their demands. Well, friends, another warning here. National popular vote is coming whether conservatives like it or not. That's the headline from Red State. 16 states have joined the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which awards each state's electoral college votes to the presidential candidate who receives the most votes in all 50 states and D.C. The compact goes into effect when enacted by states with at least 270 electors. That's a magic number to become the president. 16 states have passed this legislation so far that have 195 electoral college votes, although that number will soon increase as Minnesota state legislature just passed the legislation. National popular vote will almost certainly not be in place by 2024, but the prospect of the 2028 presidential election, the first election without Trump or Biden on the ballot, being decided by the popular vote is a distinct possibility, they report. From CBN News, for the first time in 25 years, Monday, a speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives addressed Israel's parliament, the Knesset. He told the Knesset legislators, quote, as we stand shoulder to shoulder against Iran's regional aggression, we must always remain resolute in our commitment that Iran will never acquire a nuclear weapon. His speech came just days after Israel celebrated her 75th anniversary on the Jewish calendar. McCarthy noted that this nation's birth fulfilled biblical prophecy, saying, quote, the prophet Isaiah predicted a brighter future to come. Inspired by God, he shared this command, arise, shine, thy light is come. My friends, today, 75 years after declaring independence, Israel's light shines brighter than ever before. And then added, ladies and gentlemen, Israel's rebirth is nothing less than a modern miracle, and I thank you for it. Now, Also coming out of Israel is some stunning news here just recently, and Liberty Counsel Matt Staver issued a press release that came out yesterday afternoon. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu recently revealed that he had turned the Israeli people into a giant human laboratory for Pfizer in late 2020 by exchanging with Pfizer the medical and genetic data of Israelis for COVID-19 shots. During the February 2023 interview with Dr. Jordan Peterson, a psychologist, author, and media commentator, Netanyahu proudly admitted to persuading Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla to provide Israel with enough shots so he could be the first nation to get beyond COVID-19. In return, Netanyahu offered Bourla Israel's medical database to evaluate after injection what effect the shots had on the people. Netanyahu said, quote, "I described that in my book, my conversations with Albert Bourla. Pfizer and I persuaded him to give tiny Israel then the necessary vaccines to get us out first from the COVID. And the reason I could do that is because we have a medical database. 98% of our population has digitized medical records. I said, we'll use that to tell you whether these vaccines, what they do for the people." So Israel became, if you will, the lab for Pfizer, and that's how we did it, Netanyahu admitted. In the recent February 2023 interview with Dr. Peterson, Netanyahu explains how he wants to take the now-populated database one step further into genetics, saying, quote, "I intend to bring out that base of personal medical records for the entire population, a genetic database. Give me a saliva sample. I'm sure most people would do it. Maybe we'll pay them," stated Netanyahu. Liberty Counsel founder and chairman Matt Staver, lover of Israel, supporter of Israel, said this, quote, "Unfortunately, Prime Minister Netanyahu misplaced his trust in these harmful shots and erred again when dealing the nation's medical data to procure them. These shots have never been safe nor effective, and now Israeli health authorities apparently covered up the injuries caused by these harmful injections. The Israeli people are beginning to see the dangers in these shots and deserve to know the truth about what their government is doing with their private medical data." Friends, this is why so many are concerned about the upcoming pandemic treaty with the World Health Organization, and for people in countries to have that private medical data, vaccination passports and digitized certificates, in essence, a QR code for everybody. Much concern regarding this, and that is why Dr. Michelle Bachmann was with us earlier on Crosstalk this week, warning about this upcoming assembly, World Health Assembly, coming up later this month of May, and a reminder to continue to reach out to your members of the House and Senate. By the way, Justin News is reporting the Biden administration will soon end its COVID-19 vaccine requirements for federal workers. That includes employees and contractors, as well as international travelers. That comes to an end here on May the 11th. National Review reporting today that CDC Director Rochelle Walensky stepping down, resigned today from her position as the head of the CDC, citing the end of the COVID-19 pandemic as an optimal transition point to turn over the reins to a successor. Her last day will be June the 30th. An interim CDC director has not yet been announced. We've got some more stories right after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
From film producer Dave Cristiano comes the Christian film, Always a Winner. It follows the challenges and conflicts faced by a girls' golf team at a Christian high school. Always a Winner unfolds many key themes on pride, arrogance, relationships, forgiveness, and standing for life.
You can't get an abortion.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
I have to.
No, you don't.
Baby was not very far along.
The baby was a baby at conception. You can't kill your baby.
Hannah, this is not your problem.
The 85-minute DVD, Always a Winner, is available for a donation of $18. And through May 31st, you may receive additional copies going to the same address for a donation of just $10 more for each additional copy. For Always a Winner, call 1-800-729-9829.
News Roundup Day here today on Crosstalk, and got several more things I would like to bring to your attention. And first of all, yeah, we talked about the matter of the COVID shot and what's going on in Israel with that. But Epoch Times is reporting that multiple organizations that pushed for COVID-19 vaccine mandates, guess what? According to their report, they received funding from Pfizer. That's according to financial disclosures. West Chicago Urban League President Karen Freeman Wilson said in August 2021 that the benefit of mandates far outweighs concern about them. She didn't mention that her organization received a $100,000 grant for a vaccine safety and effectiveness campaign, according to a Pfizer disclosure. That same month, the National Consumers League said it supports mandates imposed by governments and employees. They received $75,000 from Pfizer in the third quarter of 21 for, quote, vaccine policy efforts. The American Academy of Pediatrics drew more than $250,000 from Pfizer in 21. The group claimed that mandates could curb COVID-19 transmissions and cases. The American Pharmacists Association, American College of Preventive Medicine, Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy, American Society for Clinical Pathology, the American College of Emergency Physicians also received grants from Pfizer. Other groups received money from Pfizer, which makes the most used COVID-19 vaccines in the U.S. after championing them, these vaccine mandates. Okay, let's move on to the IRS. American Military News reporting the IRS is hiring armed special agents who are willing to use deadly force and conduct surveillance in all 50 states and U.S. territories, according to a job posting on the agency's website. The special agents will be part of the Criminal Investigation Division, described as the agency's law enforcement branch. It's designed to combine accounting skills with law enforcement skills to investigate financial claims. USAjobs.gov expands on the job's duties, includes conducting or participating in surveillance, armed escorts, dignitary protection, undercover operations, execution of search and arrest warrants, seizures, etc. IRS special agents must also be willing to carry and use a firearm, the website reiterates. And rate of pay would be anywhere from $52,900 to $94,200, currently more than 350 positions that are available. Daily Wire is reporting, according to a new report from the watchdog group, the U.S. Internal Revenue Service has spent at least $10 million on weapons, ammunition, and other tactical gear since 2020. The report was compiled by watchdog organization Open the Books that tracks government spending. Okay, Arthur Pawlowski, verdict is in. He's been found guilty by a judge for violating Alberta's Critical Infrastructure Defense Act, reports Rebel News. He's the first person charged, now convicted, under this piece of legislation. Let's see. Western Journal reporting the New Jersey Democratic campaign strategist James Devine, charged with election fraud for allegedly submitting more than 1,900 fake petitions to help secure a 2021 Democratic gubernatorial primary ballot spot for candidate Lisa McCormick. This was announced by the New Jersey Attorney General Matthew Platkin. Devine was McCormick's campaign manager, sent the fake voter certifications to the New Jersey Secretary of State's Division of Elections April of 2021. But the New Jersey Democratic State Committee challenged his attempt days later, arguing that all the forms featured the same style of signature and at least one of the named voters was deceased. Well, a judge took the name off the ballot, but he's now charged with third-degree offenses concerning nomination certificates or petitions, tampering with public records of information, and fourth-degree falsifying of tampering with records. Daily Signal reporting Republicans in Congress are moving to rein in President Biden's executive order, putting federal agencies in the business of getting out the vote. Their proposed legislation would defund any federally backed voter mobilization drive and prohibit the government from entering election-related agreements with private nonprofit organizations to motivate voters. Fox News is reporting an embattled George Soros bankroller prosecutor in St. Louis resigned Thursday amid a legal effort by Missouri's attorney general to fire her for allegedly neglecting her duties. St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kimberly Gardner, the city's top prosecutor, is stepping down following repeated bipartisan calls for her resignation from officials across the state. Oh, my. Let's go to the state of Texas. And we have played, you know, this audio before of the trans activists that are taking over state capitals. Well, Texas was the next target, and that happened earlier this week as Texas mobsters entered the Capitol. And here's just part of it. Yes, indeed. That goes on for some time, but a number of arrests were made there as well as Texas became ground zero for the trans activists. The Daily Caller is reporting a representative of a child gender clinic trained teachers from two Pennsylvania school districts in 2019 and 2021 to help facilitate elementary school children's gender transitions. That's according to documents from the Daily Caller News Foundation. And an employee of the Gender and Sexuality Development Program at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia met with the faculty of the Pensbury School District and Council Rock School District, advising them how to support students, including one in kindergarten, attempting to change their gender, according to documents through this public records request. Also, the Daily Caller reporting of two Colorado families suing their school district, alleging that staff encouraged their daughters to join a secret club aiming to transition students and conceal the club's activities from the parents. And folks, now we're going to hear from a 12-year-old. This is Liam Morrison, a seventh grader, Nichols Middle School in Middleborough, Massachusetts, recounting a disturbing incident that happened at his school on April 13th. He's 12 years old. He went before this school board to testify.
Hello. Good evening. My name is Liam Morrison. I live at 519 Wareham Street. I'm in the 7th, 10th grade at Nichols Middle School. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I never thought that the shirt I wore to school on March 21st would lead me to speak with you today. On that Tuesday morning, I was taken out of gym class to sit down with two adults for what turned out to be a very uncomfortable talk. I was told that people were complaining about the words on my shirt, that my shirt was making some students feel unsafe. Yes, words on a shirt made people feel unsafe. They told me that I wasn't in trouble, but it sure felt like I was. I was told that I would need to remove my shirt before I could return to class. When I nicely told them that I didn't want to do that, they called my father. Thankfully, my dad supported my decisions and came to pick me up. What did my shirt say? Five simple words. There are only two genders. Nothing harmful, nothing threatening. Just a statement I believe to be a fact. I have been told that my shirt was targeting a protected class. Who is this protected class? Are their feelings more important than my rights? I don't complain when I see pride flags and diversity posters hung throughout the school. Do you know why? Because others have a right to their beliefs just as I do. Not one person, staff, or student told me that they were bothered by what I was wearing. Actually, just the opposite. Several kids told me that they supported my actions and that they wanted one too. I was told that the shirt was a disruption to learning. No one got up and stormed out of class. No one burst into tears. I'm sure I would have noticed if they had. I experience disruptions to my learning every day. Kids acting out in class are a disruption, yet nothing is done. Why do the rules apply to one, yet not another? I feel like these adults were telling me that it wasn't okay for me to have an opposing view. Their arguments were weak, in my opinion. I didn't go to school that day to hurt feelings or cause trouble. I have learned a lot from this experience. I learned that a lot of other students share my view. I learned that adults don't always do the right thing or make the right decisions. I know that I have a right to wear a shirt with those five words. Even at 12 years old, I have my own political opinions, and I have a right to express those opinions. Even at school, this right is called the First Amendment to the Constitution. My hope in being here tonight is to bring the school committee's attention to this issue. I hope that you will speak up for the rest of us so we can express ourselves without being pulled out of class. Next time, it may not only be me. There might be more students that decide to speak out. Thank you for your time and good night.
Hats off. 12-year-old Liam Morrison, as he spoke before the school board. Unbelievable of the harassment he had for wearing a T-shirt saying there are only two genders. Washington Free Beacon is reporting California Democrats are advancing legislation that would require elementary schools to provide students access to books about radical gender ideology and other progressive causes as an effort to push against the national Christian white supremacist movement, according to the bill's author. California Assemblyman Corey Jackson said the legislation was pushed through committee and will now head to the full legislature that would put a state board in charge of classroom and school library books and texts. Todd Starnes reporting that the U.S. Navy looking for a few good drag queens. President Biden's woke Navy has invited an active duty sailor who dresses in drag to join its pilot digital ambassador program. Yeoman Second Class Joshua Kelly, whose stage name is Harpy Daniels, made an announcement about becoming one of the first Navy digital ambassadors. This experience has brought me so much strength, courage, and ambition to continue being an advocate and representative of queer sailors, Kelly said in an Instagram post. Our Navy is committed to enabling a workforce demographic similar to that of the nation it serves. The nation's latest diversity, equity, and inclusion policy update. It was all part of this. And friends, it is preposterous. A drag queen now to recruit new sailors. No wonder why we have a recruitment problem going on in our military. From FoxNews.com, the Colorado Educational Association reportedly has passed a resolution that declares that capitalism inherently exploits children, public schools, land, labor, and resources. Final version of this resolution passed the CEA. Believes that capitalism requires exploitation of children in public schools, land, labor, and resources. The screenshot of the original version reads, CEA believes that capitalism, and it does that exploitation there, and says that the only way to fully address systemic racism, the school-to-prison pipeline, climate change, patriarchy, gender and LGBTQ disparities, education inequality, and income inequality is to dismantle capitalism and replace it with a new equitable economic system. Friends, it is called socialism, and that is coming from the Colorado Teachers Union. Washington Examiner telling us New York became the first state to pass a gas and fossil fuel ban. This is ban natural gas and fossil fuels in new buildings, setting up the stage for the erosion of gas stoves in the state. And forget the war on stoves, townhall.com reports. Here's what the left is coming for now. While liberals continue to, well, they try to destroy the kitchens, now they're moving on to leaf blowers and lawnmowers could be the next item on their efforts to save so-called Mother Earth. And National Review is saying that Vermont removed its residency requirement for assisted suicide this week, officially opening the door for any American to travel to the state to end their life. Let's take a quick break. And friends, let's also open our phone lines. If you want to comment on these or other current event stories, our number here to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. What's your reaction to these stories today? 800-733-9829. Our number here today for Crosstalk, and we welcome your phone calls. By the way, we did a program on the after-school Satan clubs. Remember that earlier this week? Well, a federal judge has now ordered a school district in eastern Pennsylvania to allow the after-school Satan club meetings on the district property. Back in 1 minute, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Recently, I had on two members of the South Dakota State Legislature, a rancher, and Margaret Byfield, who's an expert on the confiscation of America's farmland by the cultural Marxists, the globalists, those committed to the Great Reset of Klaus Schwab, which is a coalition of big government and big business. South Dakota is, well, on the firing line of protecting private property rights. But this is going on in many states, so pay attention. What's it about in South Dakota right now? Putting down pipe to capture carbon, a carbon pipeline. And they're trying to use eminent domain to take the property of about 200 farmers. There are many problems with this. Not only the issue foremost of private property, but then the danger of these pipelines. Not to mention, this is a gigantic scam on the taxpayer, and it needs to be exposed. Stay tuned.
If you want to comment on these stories here today on Crosstalk or another current news event, our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Talking about craziness going on, this week also there was testimony given by Jennifer Granholm on the electrifying of our U.S. military vehicle fleet by the year 2030. I mean, folks are serious about this. We know the problems that are taking place. The huge expense for electric vehicles. We also see what is taking place with the many, many multiple hours for charging, the little distance, what happens in cold environments with all of this. And yet she relayed that they're very serious about this to take place. Here is the clip. Jennifer Granholm.
Do you support the military adopting that EV fleet by 2030?
I do, and I think we can get there as well. And I do think that reducing our reliance on the volatility of globally traded fossil fuels, where we know that global events such as the war in Ukraine can jack up prices for people back home, does not contribute to energy security. I think energy security is achieved when we have homegrown clean energy that is abundant, like you see in Iowa. We think that we can be a leader globally in how we have become energy independent.
Well, there we go, how we can become energy independent. Well, folks, we have totally, in the last few years, become energy dependent, as we have seen a complete turnaround. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We'll begin in Florida with Geraldo. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, I just want to comment about the comments about the fossil fuels banning on all of that. For me, it was a little bit disturbing hearing you talking about they're going to go after the lawnmowers.
Mm-hmm.
Why using that as scary tactics to bring probably a good point for policy? I think that doesn't benefit the discussion. My opinion is, yeah, we are going to fade from, you know, remember in 1900 when we hunt whales to get oil for the lights? I don't think we do that anymore. And that was fade out. And there was no necessity to continue doing that because we have oil from the ground. Now we are facing similar changes too, but we need to embrace with honesty and being careful. But the cold Mother Earth, yeah, that we should preserve the Mother Earth, but with reason. But scary tactics, in my opinion, doesn't help, and make people making no benefit to the discussion. I disagree with that, you know, scaring people that they go over their steak or the lawnmowers or the stove. That doesn't benefit the discussion. That's my opinion.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. But I believe indeed that it is. We're seeing that whole aspect of government control, everything going electric. Our electric grid is in some sorry state right now across this nation, very sorry state. And we cannot support that which is being planned to do. We can't. We have the push for the electric vehicles, and it'll take many, 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 many hours in order to charge a vehicle to make the next journey, you know, the next portion of their trip. We are seeing also the natural gas. Matter of fact, there's a campaign to try and stop the use of the word natural. They don't want that, the playbook. They don't want that word to be said. The natural gas, the fossil fuels that the earth can provide, there is plenty. And we have seen that happen in our own country. We're not exhausting the supply. Clean burning coal. And we see also the matters of energy that are available to us. We were energy independent. And we have become very energy dependent here in the last few years. But we're not going to exhaust the resources of this earth. Oh, yes, we do need to be good stewards in that regard, but we're not going to exhaust the resources that, God has provided here for us. By the way, another issue here today from the National Review, a federal judge last Friday had issued a temporary injunction blocking the so-called assault weapons ban in Illinois while litigation continues, ruling that the law infringed on the Second Amendment right of the state's citizens. The Protect Illinois Communities Act, which bans the sale and distribution of some semi-automatic rifles, high-capacity magazines, and switches that convert handguns into more advanced firearms, signed into law by Pritzker in January. Friday, its implementation was suspended by a judge. And then Bearing Arms is also reporting that gun stores across Illinois probably will be a little less crowded after the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals judge stayed the district court's injunction that had halted the enforcement of this. So this matter is going back and forth in the state of Illinois right now. By the way, also, the story coming out from Fox News about new regulation from the Biden administration in collaboration with environmentalists would limit hunting and fishing in multiple states across the country. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service expected to publish regulations that would limit the equipment allowed on public refuge properties and expand the area where cost-effective lead ammo and fishing tackle is banned. International Order of T. Roosevelt Executive Director Luke Hilgerman is spearheading the effort to get constitutional amendments on the ballot in several states in 24 to secure the right to hunt and fish across the country. And let's pick up Leroy in Atlanta, Georgia. Leroy, you're on the air.
Hey, Jim, I wanted to share a local story with you. The mayor of Atlanta, and this came out in late April 21st, 2023. Now, the government, they're not supposed to make money, right? They're not in the business of making money or any of that. That's what they tell us. But here locally, the mayor has decided to partner with Hertz to launch Hertz Electrifies Atlanta, a public-private partnership aimed at accelerating the adoption of electric vehicles and expanding the environmental and economic benefits of electrification throughout Atlanta. Now, evidently, people aren't buying them. If the government is buying car or going into a public-private partnership with a rental car agency in order to build charging stations, also in partnership with Uber, that's got to tell everyone that nobody's buying these cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only seen four Rivians myself, and there's a whole Rivian plant here. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. They're taking – how are you able to do this with taxpayer money? And I'll leave it there.
Yeah, thank you for raising that. And that's something that guest Tom DeWeese, who has been with us many, many times on Crosstalk, has warned against the public-private partnerships that are taking place. And you've just cited a good example for that. Thank you for the call, Leroy. And friends, thank you for joining us today and all this week here on Crosstalk. Lord willing, on Monday, dealing with the immigration issue. And also, Alex Newman scheduled to be with us on Tuesday, dealing with AI, artificial intelligence. By the way, the Lord's Day is coming. Make sure you're in a Bible-believing, Bible-teaching local church. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.